The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. That's Tom Fornelli. It's Monday, March 2nd. And we are mad about what we saw over the weekend. The madness was great. Combine in Indianapolis. We always enjoy checking in on the NFL Combine. We'll share over the next little bit the aspects that we like to pick apart. We've got some players that we stood out that made headlines that burn it down in the house, and of course some storylines. Maybe we want to hand out some golden dumbbells to the strength coaches that were getting it done this year, as we saw their products or their prospects out there doing well in the underwear Olympics. Gentlemen, I know you two are both passionate viewers of the Combine. As we sit here on Monday, do you feel like it was a good year?
Well, I was a little bit – this wasn't my favorite Combine year, because the whole – see, my Combine experience is to sit in the office and like watch the Combine in the office and work and look up and see a 40 and look down and work, and you know, you kind of get to see it all. I've been given a lot of free pub to YouTube TV over the last 12 months or so, 8 months or so, and it's time to give YouTube TV a little reality check. They don't have NFL Network.
Oh.
So the prime time mixed with my YouTube TV allegiance means I saw almost none of the Combine. I was just watching it on Twitter.
I will try my best not to go onto an hour long rant about this, but I hated it at night. It sucked. It ruined it. Absolutely ruined it. And I mean, for you, Bart, like you said, you couldn't even watch it. That's what it did to you. But it was just like, I don't like being forced with the decision to watch, like, you know, like the Illini played on Thursday night basketball. An important game.
Big game. Real big game.
Against Northwestern. Rivalry game. I do not like having to face the decision of watching an actual sporting event or the Combine, which I do enjoy quite a bit. Not just from, you know, not because I have to do mock drafts, not because any of that. I just enjoy football to the level where the Combine to me is interesting, because I like to judge these players in this kind of situation. I've seen most of them. I know most of them from watching them, but to see them in this kind of situation and get a better test of them as individuals, not just on the field, their abilities, I enjoy the hell out of it because I learn things watching it.
I think
but it can't really compete with like an actual sporting event.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also, I'm sorry, I'll stop in a minute. I'm really trying. Agents are pissed off too. Because the agents are saying, I don't know if you, Barton, you didn't watch, Chip, I don't know how close of attention you paid, but a lot of guys were like pulling hamstrings and stuff like that. And the agents are pissed because they're saying that this was a result of their players having to stand around so often because the NFL Network and them were trying to, you know, lengthen it out for prime time. So there was a whole lot more standing around doing nothing than there usually is. And now these guys are pulling hamstrings or suffering little minor injuries just for prime time television purposes to make the event last a little longer. So I think it was a disaster. We'll see what the ratings say when they come out. I don't know. Maybe they have. But I really hope that they go back to like the weekday date afternoon times next year.
So we've tried to catch as much of the Combine as possible. Some of the big storylines that stood out, probably we can sort of pass this around or nominate it as such. But do we start with Mekhi Becton?
You could.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mekhi Becton, 6'7", 364 pounds. And on that 6 foot seven, 364 pounds, we're testing out at 17% body fat. Man ran a 5.1 40 yard dash. 5.1 40 yard dash, 6 foot seven, 364 pounds, 17% body fat. Becton's always, because of his frame, been pointed to as a potential for the NFL. There have been times, particularly early on in his career, because he was thrust into playing time really early, where you weren't quite sure. Like, he'd get the All-ACC honors, and when you'd watch him, you'd feel like there'd be a couple plays a game where you noticed him. But honestly, I didn't say that I had him grading up near the top for all of his performance. And then, you know, he's a big part of that Louisville offense when Scott Satterfield steps in, and, you know, they're all about the misdirection. They're all about keeping things going left to right. Seems to play well, but when he's able to make headlines like this with his athleticism, I kind of feel like Mekhi Becton earned himself some money.
Yeah, I mean, I think he only tested in the 40 in the bench, so I guess there's some other things we got to validate from the combine side of it, but he could be the first offensive lineman off the board, really. Like, think of it as I always envision him as being I always assumed he was sort of an Orlando Brown comp. But he weighed 20 pounds more, about the same height, about the same arm length, I think. What was his arm length? His arm length was, about the same, half inch on Orlando Brown arm length. But Orlando Brown ran a 5.85 40. Orlando Brown was, which is kind of what, I just assumed McBecton would run something like that too. But I just think when you're not questioning his athleticism, and Orlando Brown was just this big bodied guy that sort of understood angles, understood, and could sort of overwhelm people. And Becton has all that, but he actually has some pop and some athleticism that Orlando Brown doesn't and didn't. I mean, he could be number one off the board at offensive tackle.
Yeah, I can't remember. I just finished working on my mock draft. I haven't written it up, but I was going through the order before we stepped on. Comes out on Tuesday, kids. Make sure you read it. I'm pretty sure I had Becton as my first OT off the board, because I do think that he did really well for himself with this. And I do think, too, there's a lot of really good tackles in this draft.
Period. I also wanted to make note while we were talking about the big boys on the offensive line. Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, combine record vertical jump.
A freak.
So yes, 6'4", 320 pounds, sets new combine records with a 36.5-inch vertical jump, and his broad jump is 10 feet.
His combine was unbelievable.
6'4", 320, and his big old body's moving 10 feet on that broad jump.
I don't. Do you guys ever use Mock Draftable?
I know the system. I don't necessarily use it myself, but...
Tristan's little graph is very large circle, which is a good thing. Yeah. I mean, his broad jump for offensive linemen in the history of what they have done, you know, for the combine, his broad jump's 99th percentile. Clearly his vertical jump's 99th percentile. His 40 yard dash is 98th percentile. He's got good size. His bench press was his weakest thing. He was 45th percentile and he still did 24 reps. So it's not he's weak, but his three cone drill was 71st. His 20 yard shuttle was 60th. Dude's just a freak, man.
He had he has a higher vert than DeAndre Hopkins, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, AJ Green, Amari Cooper, and others. And he rips Iowa. I guess it was probably this time off this year. Time last year, Iowa's football Twitter account sent out a tweet of him hang cleaning 450 pounds for three reps. Like, he was a 66-foot shot putter out of high school, multi-year state champion in wrestling. I mean, the dude's just a beast. He's a freak of nature that is, and even in the thing that's sort of interesting about him is he wasn't, cause he's from Iowa. He wasn't dominant when we saw him in camps. He wasn't dominant when we had him in the Army All-American Bowl, but he was just, it was clear from his other athletic stuff that he was a really special athlete that just didn't have the polish yet. And man, when Iowa gets a guy like that, they do this with him.
Who yeah,
he's kind of a rare breed for Iowa too, because their offensive linemen, usually when they leave and enter the draft, are usually fourth and fifth year guys, and he's not. So
it's time to go. Time for you to get out. Where do y'all want to go next? Any player or headline or storyline you want to turn a spotlight to?
It turns out that Isaiah Simmons is a freak athlete and very good.
Who would have thought?
No, I that's one of my favorite parts of the combine every year, is watching those who, you know, are NFL fans who don't really pay super close attention to college, if at all, suddenly discover these guys. Like they'll have read them in like mock drafts for the last couple months since they started coming out, and be like, okay, yeah, okay, and then they finally get a dose of the guy at the combine, and it's like, wow, have you seen this Isaiah Simmons guy? He played like five different positions.
He ran a 4.3940, yes, which was the same time as Florida cornerback C.J. Henderson.
They did. They do those 40-yard draft things where they – or 40-yard dash things where they would do – like they would overlay the players on other players at their positions and, you know, like from past classes. I mean, they did one with Simmons, Julio Jones, – Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, and another wide receiver. I can't remember who it was. And Simmons beat them all.
Yeah.
he's insane. He's one of the biggest freaks I mean, you'll ever see.
Yeah.
I mean, he's him and worse to me were like the stories of the whole deal. I think The other one that like low key was almost as freaky as Isaiah Simmons, and some tests he was even better, was Willie Gay of Mississippi State, who played all of four games and exploded Garrett Schrader's face before the bowl game and got Joe Moorhead fired. They could have used him for another eight games.
Yeah, that wasn't a shock, because I mean, think we all knew he was a good athlete. The thing that's going to kill him is just the suspension stuff. That's going to be what has teams hesitate. I think that if you're just drafting an athlete, that's the dude that's going to be fine.
But his absence really helped those Mississippi State overs. So right. We are always grateful to Willie Gay and Leo Lewis and everybody else.
What Leo Lewis? Leo Lewis was in there, which was part of the problem.
Okay.
But Willie Gay was a good thing for the overs, having Willie Gay out of there.
What was
another? Go ahead.
Yeah. What were his tests like? Where did he stand out? I didn't have him. I didn't get a chance to catch him.
He killed it in the 40. I know he was. Let me look it up real quick. Willie Gay. He ran 4.46 in the 40. He had a broad jump of 136 inches with his 99th percentile. His 40's 97th percentile. His vertical jump of 39.5 inches, 93rd percentile. His bench press wasn't great, but he was, you know, he's good size, big hands. He was average in the 20-yard shuttle and the three cone drills. Just he improved his stock a little bit. And it's going to depend on how he does in interviews and that kind of stuff with like the suspensions, how teams feel about that. He's a guy who could go in the first round. I just don't know if he will.
I doubt he does, just because there's like, I think he had a shot if he had played this year, but it's just hard for me to envision it. I'm like, is there a player that you think is going to fool NFL scouts or draft Knicks with their combine that we as college football fans know is actually not that good?
Jabari Zuniga.
Yeah, he did really well.
He did really well, and I kind of feel like I've been calling Jabari Zuniga's name like trying to get ahead of everybody, and I always outrun where he's at. I overshot the target on him for like 3 years.
My thing with Jabari is that like he's clearly, you know, he can move and he's an athlete. It's just he's not big and he's got short arms. And I feel like, you know, for that position where you're going to want him, that's not great. And I'll also say his teammate, who everybody's saying C.J. Henderson had a great combine, and he did, because the combine is kind of where CJ Henderson, in my mind, based on what I see, you know, when I watch him play at Florida, is the kind of stuff he's going to excel at. My problem with CJ Henderson is when he's on the field covering dudes, he sometimes is way too concerned with trying to get an interception or making a play, and he will lose track of his guy. And I feel like he's got good hands, yes. So there's a reason he makes those interceptions. I just feel like there's a lot of times where he's, you know, letting his guy free because he's too busy looking back to see if he can get a pick.
I thought I think it's gonna be interesting to see what happens with the Alabama receivers, Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. Jeudy was like a 25th percentile athlete with all his testing.
Yeah, he did not have a great combine.
And Ruggs, but Jeudy was like for really throughout their time at Alabama, Jeudy was considered the sort of the best guy of that bunch. You know, there was points during the season this year where mock drafts had Jeudy going like top five, just like crazy high. And now as we're getting closer, there's so many good receivers. And so many of these guys ran so well, including Ruggs running a 4.27. You know, this is just going to be, to me, really interesting to see whether people kind of circle back on their early impressions of Jeudy or whether they talk themselves out of them and get seduced by some of these faster wide receivers.
Yeah, see, for me, I feel like when I watch Jeudy, it's not so much like his athleticism that really stands out, although it's, you know, he's still, what, his 40 was, well, let me see, he ran a 4.45 40,
so yeah, his 40 was good, but he ran like a 4.53 shuttle, which,
yeah,
that's the more
third percentile, which, yeah. So, you know, maybe he slipped and it killed his speed, I don't know, but my thing with Jeudy has always been, when I watch him, it's just his route running, right. I just feel like he's so good and so clean and so sharp when he does that's more than his athleticism and ability is what helps separate him from college level players. Now, will he be able to do that consistently against NFL defensive backs? I don't know.
I would take Justin Jefferson ahead of Henry Ruggs, behind Jerry Jeudy.
I don't think that's that's part of the problem with like this wide receiver class. It's like there's so many, and there's so many defensible positions to take in any kind of ranking that you want to give them.
CeeDee Lamb got knocked, right? Didn't CeeDee Lamb get knocked for not doing enough bench presses?
Did he?
You know what? CeeDee Lamb doesn't have to do any damn bench presses.
I mean, that's the thing is, like,
I'm not drafting CeeDee Lamb to impress me in the weight room.
Yeah, like CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, I almost would say that their combine results are negligible in my eyes. I have seen them ball, and I think that they can do that at the next level.
Yeah, but no one's saying they can't. So the question then is, are you still saying, like, so, I mean, your position is still that he's better than Henry Ruggs.
Correct. Yes.
Despite the fact that Ruggs is like a significantly better athlete.
Yes.
I think Ruggs has a higher ceiling if he taps into his potential, but I don't know that he's a ready-made better receiver than those guys know.
Man,
I'm sure you guys have watched Ruggs' basketball clips
by
now, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're more fun than the football.
You know, he ran a 10 in high school. He didn't play football as a sophomore, for one. He just played basketball. As a junior, he balled out. We were like, you know, is this guy even going to play football on the next level? I don't even think he ran track until his senior year, and he ran a 10.5 in his senior year. And I think that was his first time running track. Like, and when you watch his basketball clips, there's good verticals and there's impressive dunking, but the explosiveness, the spring, the twitch, the bounce, like whatever you want to phrase, like the way he moves and elevates and just explodes, I think that's some of the most athletic movement I've ever seen.
So Ruggs. You're Ruggs.
I'm not taking a stand here. I would understand the appeal of a Ruggs, particularly given sort of the way that the NFL's going in terms of like how much speed can impact things, even in the way offense is operating right now, in the way, you know, the teams that were playing for the Super Bowl and how they can use the jet sweep, how they can use the vertical passing game, you know, all the different ways they can get guys involved beyond just running an out and up or whatever, you know, like, so I think the game is, it's a good time to be running 4-2s. And I think that getting influenced and sucked into that is a little more defensible right now with a guy like Ruggs, who I actually think is a really good football player.
Sure.
Also.
Yeah.
Then maybe the, like, who was like the Maryland receiver or whatever that ran fast and got drafted in the first round by the Raiders, or, you know, like, there's always these guys that get drafted high who suck. I don't think that's Ruggs. Is he better than Judy? I don't know. I'm taking the easy route, and I'm not making a stand there, but I think it'll be very, if he goes one or if he goes first receiver, I'm not going to knock that pick.
I think that I go Judy, Lamb, and then I'll start having some conversations. But I feel pretty good about my 1 and 2. Tom?
Yeah. I like Lamb a little more. I think Judy's cleaner. I think Lamb's a bit more explosive. And I think that Lamb, I feel like, for as good as Lamb is and for what he's done, he's also played in an offense that hasn't really asked him to be like, an, you know, the thing with a lot of offenses, like we see like Oklahoma runs and the air raids in general, is they're, the route trees are never as deep as you see in a lot of offenses, where I feel like Judy's been in a much more NFL-ish kind of route tree than Lamb is. So I feel like there's a higher ceiling there, because Lamb has already proven he's definitely the athlete. He's proven he could be, you know, he's shown he can make plays. And I feel like if he gets a little more NFL coaching and a little more advanced as far as the route tree that he's going to run and what he can do, I feel like he can become even better. Whereas I feel like Jerry Jeudy, if you draft him, you're drafting a very good wide receiver. But I feel like you're drafting a number two receiver. Whereas I feel like CeeDee Lamb has the chance to be that number one, you know, big shot, awesome big money receiver that you have, whereas Judy's always going to be, to me, kind of like a more of a complimentary guy.
It's one good complimentary player.
Mm-hmm. He'd be a high-end number two for sure.
Yeah.
I think the quarterbacks in this class are getting pretty interesting. First of all, Fromm's combine was garbage. Was pretty bad. Just look like
I'm so glad he's no longer on our dogs and we don't have to worry about him.
By the way, how perfect is it for, sorry, quick sidebar. The Georgia podcast forgot about Missouri coach Eli Drinkwitz.
Just because because we don't really respect them as being in the SEC East.
Absolutely not. Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, no, they're
Missouri's in the SEC?
Yeah, that was just still part of the hazing that's been going on since Missouri showed up in the SEC East years ago. Sorry. Yeah, Jake Fromm, trash combine.
We were just trying to stay in character with that one. It kind of looks like the starting quarterback for the SAE, you know, intramural squad when you compare him to those other guys. And that's not fair. That's not who he is. Like, he's not going to blow up a combine. And I still think he's going to be, you know, someone's going to fall in love with the interviews to the point where he probably still didn't get out of the second round, would be my guess. But just out of curiosity, like, I texted a personnel higher up, and I was like, did Fromm just work himself out of the second day? And because people in the office were talking about that, and so I would have been surprised if he had, and so I just wanted to hear what my guy said, and he was like, I don't think it was that bad, but it was pretty bad. So, I mean, he did not help himself in any way over the weekend.
Here's some scary way to look at Fromm's performance. And I'm out of the Bears taking him in the second round train. I'm off that, because I just, his small hands then combined with his arm strength, I don't think will play well in the winter in Chicago. But back to back draftable, they do the comps based on how the players, you know, performed at the combine. And here are the closest comps to Fromm based on combine performances among quarterbacks. Tyler Wilson, Arkansas. Joe Burrow, but that's only based on the measurables because Burrow didn't go through any of the drills and all that kind of stuff. Jared Stidham, Greg McElroy, Jimmy Clausen, Brandon Allen, C.J. Beathard, Kurt Benkert, Brad Sorensen from Southern Utah in 2013, and Cooper Rush. In other words, a lot of guys who had successful college careers, but nobody in that group who had, you could say, has been anything in the NFL.
Yeah.
All right. What's go ahead.
Well, I wanted to talk more quarterbacks, though.
Yeah.
So there's a couple more storylines I think that are
interesting. Because Justin Herbert was Justin Herbert's going to be continuing to attract everybody that wants to see all the gifts.
Uh-huh. The combine was tailor made for Justin Herbert.
Todd McShay, did you hear he bet Mel Kiper $5,000 to a charity that Jordan Love would go above Herbert?
Did he?
Yeah.
Did y'all see that?
Probably going to lose that bet.
I'd take Love over Herbert. I just would.
I don't think other teams are going to. I just think that, you know, they're going to see here. Okay, I'll do it. I just did the comparisons for Fromm. You know who the number one comparison is to Justin Herbert on the mock draftable?
Who?
Some quarterback from Wyoming named Josh Allen.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, Blaine Gabbert. Number three, Andrew Luck. Number four, Duke's own Daniel Jones. And then Josh Freeman, Jordan Love, Kent Smith, Steven Montez, Paxton Lynch, and Jeff Drizzy.
Yeah, but see, I don't like the mock draftable thing for quarterbacks.
No,
it's not that relevant.
But I'm saying I'm using the Josh Allen just because of who did all the NFL teams fall in love with last year based on his arm strength and his size and his mobility. And then it's like, yeah, but did you watch the tape? Who cares? He was, didn't have anybody. He was throwing to, like insurance salesmen. And now with Justin Herbert, it's going to be, yeah, but did you see the tape? Yeah, but who cares? He was playing in an offense that wasn't suited to his skills. It's like everybody is already looking for every single excuse they can to say that it wasn't Justin Herbert's fault. And maybe it wasn't, but I have seen it too many times from NFL teams and decision makers. I think that Herbert will go before Love. I'm not saying he's going to be better than Love, but I'm almost sure he will.
You know who else is a good comparison to Josh Allen? Jordan Love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because Jordan Love, 2018, when he had some good players around him and a quality coaching staff around him that he was comfortable with, he was nasty. Last year, new coaching staff, totally turned over the offense, and he came back down to earth, which is basically exactly what happened to Josh Allen. So I think that's going to be a pretty interesting one to see what happens with.
Jordan Love, I understand the concerns about Justin Herbert, but I don't know if I think that Jordan Love definitely is going to be better.
No, but and look, I mean, and I'm not even going to sit my
Jordan Love comp is Jameis Winston. Not in terms of size or anything, but I was just talking about touchdowns and interceptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question for you guys. So I'll stick it on the quarterbacks. Raise your hand if you had Cole McDonald running the fastest 40 among QBs. And also his hair, the dreads are gone.
Did he have the fastest?
Yeah,
that's all. He ran fast.
4.58. He beat Jalen.
Yeah. Did you see?
He shaved off the dreads to look more professional.
Yeah, that explanation. 4.58. I didn't want them to think my dreads were a character concern. Dude.
Also made him more aerodynamic, apparently.
One more thing on Jordan Love. I think that Robbie Callen pointed this out, but there needs to be like a college football degenerate gambler on the set for all NFL draft coverage, because Utah State, I looked this up, had five games where it missed covering the spread by more than two touchdowns. Like, anybody that was watching Jordan Love blow covers, throw in interceptions, will tell you that he's not worth drafting.
Okay, I'll tell you something that's even more bizarre here. Just as I was running down the combine results and sort of studying it, I kept on running into Rhode Island players. I mean, did you guys know there are three Rhode Island players at the NFL combine this year?
Go Rams.
No, I did not.
There are two wide receivers. There was one offensive lineman. Do you guys know what Rhode Island's record was this year?
1-11.
Yeah, 3-8.
They were... They were 2-10 with three NFL athletes on their offense.
Yeah, but the Atlantic 10 is a really deep conference.
I mean, remarkable. I was like, wow, man, those Rhode Island guys. Man, Rhode Island must have been good this year. I don't remember hearing much about them in FCS. And so I just like looked up their stats and their record, and it was 2-10. So I don't know how that worked. The other thing that was – so the two more quarterback things I thought was interesting.
Sorting the whole group by vertical jump, reverse
sorting the
order.
Quarterback group?
Yeah. Like Jacob Eason's 27.5-inch vertical jump. Dead last among quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. Just behind Nate Stanley.
Yeah, Nate Stanley, James Morgan, Jake Fromm, Brian Lewerke, and Shea Patterson.
You know, one of those Rhode Island wide receivers, vertical 26.5 inches. It was like the worst vertical for a receiver of all time or something. You know, Jacob Eason got bad reviews in his interview process too.
Yeah.
Which is 100% expected. Because Jacob Eason is just like laid back, you know, chill, easygoing dude. And I think that they wanted a little more intense guy.
But here's the thing. That's going to be a knock against Jacob Eason. Justin Herbert being the same type of person won't be a knock against him. And you know why? Because look at him. He's so big. He's got a strong arm.
He was an Eagle Scout.
He was an Eagle Scout. Yeah.
Gotta trust them.
But yeah, I heard I talked to somebody that was up there that said that Joe Burrow was outstanding in interviews. Like his recall, you know, what pulling up plays from a Texas game and just sort of being able to have him tell you exactly what was about to happen in this play and what, you know, what the coverage was and what the route, you know, just like the way he was able to just dial up and recall information and sort of talk quickly and decisively about sort of what took place and why was apparently 10 out of 10, which is not surprising.
Not at all.
And apparently Tua, not quite like Burrow is a leg up on Tua in that regard.
I would bet Jalen Hurts did pretty well in that too.
I would think so. So this and Hurts brings up another one that's interesting. So are y'all seeing all the Taysom Hill comparisons?
Yes.
For Jalen Hurts?
Yes.
How you feel about that?
He's a much better quarterback than Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
Like, what are we talking about? Taysom Hill.
Yeah. Like Jalen is not a perfect quarterback, and he has some serious flaws that I think he is mostly a one read guy, and then he's trying to look to run, or he's a little too selfish on like read option kind of stuff. But as far as just being a general quarterback, I think at this point in their careers, Jalen Hurts is far more advanced than Taysom Hill was at this point. Because I think Taysom Hill was like 33 when he was entering the draft,
and Taysom Hill's like. Taysom Hill's passer rating in his healthy seasons, which there were only two, were 116 and 118. Jalen Hurts' passer rating the last two seasons were 196 and 191. Like, you don't draft him in like the sixth round as some guy you might be able to put in some packages for. Like, he could potentially be a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a good player. Like, I don't understand why we're overthinking this Hurt stuff. He's not some incompetent passer. Taysom Hill, it looked like a, you know, and then when you're in middle school or whatever, like junior high football, you just put the best guy at quarterback and, you know, he can't really throw, but he makes the most out of it. Like, that was what Taysom Hill looked like in college.
I feel like Jalen is a dude that if he gets drafted by the right team, and I mean like somebody that doesn't need him to step in right away and be the franchise QB, but if he gets drafted somewhere with either like an aging veteran that's going to be retiring soon or just kind of like a placement holder that's there for another year or two and just gets a year to just get acclimated, I think he could be really good.
Yeah, man. It kind of blows my mind that people are trying to paint Jalen Hurts as potentially a good gimmick option. It's like, just draft him as a guy that could play quarterback for you.
NFL can't quit Taysom Hill. They've been talking about him for 2 damn months. I mean, like they really tried to say if Drew Brees doesn't retire, it's okay. They've got Taysom Hill.
Yeah, I remember a bunch of people like arguing about Taysom Hill being a franchise QB. And I'm like, who the hell ever said Taysom Hill is a franchise QB?
There's this weird
one tweet, and NFL Twitter spent like 3 weeks talking about it.
Yeah, there was this weird NFL Twitter argument going on where I feel like the initial tweet or comment was from PFT talking about him being a potential future star in the NFL or something. And like everyone took that and ran with it and had debates with it. And it wasn't even really clear to me what the quote was even referring to, like franchise quarterback or just a player that's going to continue to make an impact. Like this Taysom Hill stuff is kind of wild.
Yeah. How about Donovan Peoples-Jones having a great, great, great combine? And I hope people don't get confused.
I was going to say, like, that is he going to be the guy that fools people, kissing to draft him high? Because he ain't going to make plays in the next level, I don't think.
No. You know who was really impressive this week? Speaking of receivers, Chase Claypool.
Mm.
Yeah.
He had a great combine, and it's like he's kind of like that tweener. Nobody knows if he's a tight end or a wide receiver, but yeah. I feel like that's a good thing that works in his favor, because my God, ran a 4.42 40, 40 and a half inch vertical, 126 inch broad jump. He's got giant hands, he's got good size. That's a guy that is going to be utilized by somebody.
Yeah.
When do those kinds of players start going? Is it normally a run on them, like in the second or third round?
I think that, I mean, depending on how things go, he could work his way, because this is also not a great tight end class, I don't
right.
think.
Right.
No, I agree.
And if teams are looking at him as like kind of a, an inline tight end, not an inline tight end, not a blocker, but just, you know, like a slot guy, like a Travis Kelce type-ish, I think he could be like definitely mid to late first round by the time this is all settled.
So he's competing with like Oregon's Jacob Breland, who's coming off an injury.
Cole Kmet.
Yeah. The guy who used to be at Arkansas but then left.
O'Grady.
Yeah.
I think he's got off-field concerns. Bryson Hopkins had a decent combine from Purdue. Harrison Bryant. I think probably Cole Kmet's. Yeah, I mean, he could beat with Cole Kmet, his teammate.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think Cole Kmet's probably. I mean, Cole Kmet would probably be my top true tight end.
Yeah, he didn't have a great combine though. But here, right. It's going back to the mock draftable like comps. Here's for Chase Claypool, not just as an athlete, not at any particular position. Thomas Howard, outside linebacker. Jared Cook, tight end. Alan Lazar, wide receiver. Isaiah Simmons, linebacker. Jacob Phillips, linebacker. Marcus Davis, wide receiver. Adrian Wilson, safety. Jonathan Welsh, linebacker. Colt Lyerla, tight end. Nnamdi Asamoah, cornerback. That's just, it's like, nobody, he could be used in a lot of different ways.
Sick athletes everywhere. Neville Gallimore ran a 4.79 40 for comparison at the defensive tackle position. Quinnen Williams 40, which turned a lot of heads last year, was a 4.83.
Yeah, Gallimore's a freak. He was a freak coming in.
Yeah, I've had him going to like the Titans late in the first in all my mocks, but starting to think that he might not be there anymore.
Be interesting.
What would y'all do with Jonathan Taylor?
I mean, I think he's the best running back.
I mean, my thoughts on Taylor haven't changed. I think that he did very well at the combine. My problem with Taylor is he did well as far as like the shuttle drills and like that kind of stuff. I still think that if you get him going in a straight line, good luck. He's hard to tackle and he's very fast. I just still feel when I would watch him at Wisconsin, if he has to change direction, he slows down a little bit and he needs to get back up to full speed. And also, I think his vision is something that I am not completely sold on. Like, if the hole is where the hole is designed to be, I think he's great. I think sometimes when the hole's not there and he's got to find it, he struggles. And I think that was evident when you saw him face defenses like Ohio State, who were able to take that, you know, the design play away. If he's up against a good defensive line that could neutralize an offensive line like Wisconsin's that generally has an advantage on most other teams that it's playing, he really struggles. He's not like the kind of back that I feel like that can make his own success. And I think that could be a problem for him on the next level, because you're going to face a lot more defensive fronts able to do that at the NFL than you were, you know, in the Big Ten.
So who's your top back?
I mean, I don't think this is a great running back class, honestly. I like Anthony McFarland. I love Cam Akers. I've always loved Cam Akers. I wonder if
it's going to be interesting, the game of chicken of seeing how low you can get Cam Akers.
Yeah.
Because he's a first round, from a talent standpoint, he's a first round type of guy.
Yeah, and he could end up being the best back in this class. I mean, he's not all that different than Dalvin Cook. When I watch him, he looks a lot like Dalvin Cook, and we've seen what Dalvin's been able to do for the Vikings. And I just feel like you get him behind a real offensive line, that's a guy that'd be great. I think DeAndre Swift is very good. I just think that there's no clear-cut, duh, have-to-have running back in this class, but I think people are going to tell themselves that Taylor is, and I just think that I would rather wait for one of those, or maybe I think Swift might be the first one to go, but I would rather wait till those guys are gone and then take a Cam Akers or maybe even an A.J. Dillon, who I thought had a pretty good combine, better than I was expecting, one of those guys than the top guys, just because I think you're bound to get very similar performance and maybe better.
Any other notes from the combine weekend?
Well, I wanted to hand out some golden dumbbells.
All right, so we'll do golden dumbbells on the other side of the break. Coming up on the other side, the Golden Dumbbell Awards and Alabama looking like it has its replacement for Scott Cochran. Next.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS! Here's where we can see them!
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
It's time to get ready for your fantasy baseball drafts. Check out the number one fantasy baseball podcast out there, Fantasy Baseball Today. The Fantasy Baseball Today podcast has been helping listeners with their leagues for more than 10 years now. The position previews, well, guess what? They are all published. They've got sleepers, breakouts, busts, live mock drafts, and listener emails, and that's all just this week. Plus, you'll get a new episode every morning, 5 days a week until the season ends. That's Fantasy Baseball Today, anywhere you listen to podcasts. All right, golden dumbbell time. Who's obviously Rhode Island's going to be somewhere on here, right?
So the golden dumbbell it's a really like, you know, it's tough because are you rewarding for having guys in there? Are you rewarding for what, like, recruiting freaks and just not screwing it up? Are you, so it's sort of, you know, it's kind of tricky. But I'll hand out three golden dumbbells.
All right.
I'll hand out one for, I think this year, Joey Batson at Clemson, a guy who's in his 22nd year there. So he's been there for a minute. But I mean, Isaiah Simmons is a freak. And
his body did not, you know, look like that when he showed up on campus.
Did not. And he was a 23-foot long jumper. Like, he was a great athlete. He was also a 4.7 plus 40-yard dash guy. So he added 40 pounds and dropped his 40-yard dash 0.4 of a second or whatever it is. So, you know, you didn't just luck into Isaiah Simmons. So that there was development there. But also, like, Tanner Muse ran a 4.41 40. I think AJ Terrell was in the 4.4 range. Kayvon Wallace, John Simpson, all those guys tested well. Tremaine Ankrum, I think, didn't test that well. I don't have his numbers in front of me, but other than that, pretty much everyone tested well, including a couple that were kind of off the charts. And then, you know, and that includes a Tanner Muse, who I'm not sure anyone saw running borderline 4.3. And you can even give him a little bit partial credit for Kelly Bryant, had a pretty good combine out of Missouri, who spent a good 3+ years or whatever at Clemson. So I thought that in terms of just this year's draft, Clemson could be sort of considered the winner.
Do you think that comes also on the back, like the rolling out Dexter Lawrence, Christian Wilkins, and Cleveland Farrell last year? You're like, oh wow, but then now when you follow it up, now you just have to start to believe that, you know, we're going to turn around next year. Well, guess what? We're going to be talking about Xavier Thomas, like it's Trevor Lawrence. Like it's just it's going to continue.
So my golden dumbbells go to 3 subcategories this year. Group of 5 and sort of lifetime achievement. And so I didn't even really consider last year, but I do think that that's, you know, yeah, sure, that's relevant. I mean, Clemson's, the guy's a stud, clearly. They've been producing at a really high level, and that's, we're going to get more of that next year, I'm sure. The one that I think, and look, we've talked about, I think Notre Dame you could also put in there for this year. Chris Fink tested like 4.42. That's a former walk-on. Chase Claypool, we talked about. Alohi Gilman didn't run great in the 40, but it was really good in all the other testing events. Same with Jalen Elliott. So I've given Matt Bayless a lot of love. I think he's good.
This would be their second straight golden dumbbell.
Yeah, so I'm not giving – they're not getting one. That's okay.
Matches their golden domes.
That's right. But my like career, like my lifetime achievement golden dumbbell this year goes to Dwight Gault at Penn State. It wasn't even like a crazy combine for Penn State, but when you go through and just look at everyone who tested and sort of go through each program, and you know there's some guys that aren't that good, some guys that are good. Penn State didn't really have a guy that was underachieved. John Reed was off the charts in all the lateral agility stuff, change of direction stuff. Rob Windsor was good. Yetur Gross Matos was good. Like no one that blew the combine up, but all just really good. And I just think there's no one I trust more on a year in, year out basis that like their guys are going to come and show out than Penn State and Dwight Gault. Because remember, he was producing like Vernon Davis back in the day at Maryland. You know, he's been doing this forever. And every year Penn State guys ball. And then my last golden dumbbell for a group of 5 guy, Boise State's dudes showed up. Jeff Pittman is their guy. He's been at Boise the last 4 years. Was it Boise? I guess back in like the Dan Hawkins days, in like the early 2000s. But Ezra Cleveland was one of the best O-linemen there from a testing standpoint. John Hightower tested really well at receiver. John Molshan, I don't know if I'm saying his last name right. Molshan, who's another offensive lineman that tested really well. So, you know, in terms of the group of 5 guys, Boise State was really good. Temple was pretty good too. But Brad Ort is the Temple strength coach. He's only been there for a year, so I'm not going to give him full credit.
Deal with it, Brad.
What was the how did Cam Brown from Penn State test?
Good. I mean, not like he's really long. He's like I think measured 6'5". But he ran like 4.7, I want to say, but was good in all the other drills. Let's see. He was 4.72.
4.72, yeah.
At 6'5", 233 with 34-inch arms. But he was 123 inches broad jump, which is 10 feet, 35.5-inch vertical. 16 bench reps. So, like, 40's not ideal, but everything else was good. for a 6 foot five linebacker.
Yeah. For just this long, rangy, big long person. Any programs, Tom, that stood out to you?
I thought, you mentioned Notre Dame. I thought Notre Dame's players did a terrific job. I thought LSU's guys had a pretty good day, but I think we kind of expected that to come. Off the top of my head, other than that, no. I mean, I do think that Boise's guys did well. Who's the linebacker for Boise whose name is completely escaping my head right now?
Curtis Weaver?
He did.
Curtis Weaver.
Yeah, Curtis Weaver was more athletic than I thought he was going to be based on what he did. Other than that, no.
The
Oklahoma's guys were pretty good.
Oh, yeah. You know, Kenneth Murray, I forgot to mention him earlier. He had a good combine.
Oklahoma was like the 4 for 4, basically. Like all four guys tested pretty well.
Golden dumbbell watch list.
TCU was pretty good. Florida was pretty good. Georgia was improved from last year. Like, remember last year there was like some kind of startlingly bad testing from Georgia guys?
I do.
Mm-hmm. But we got Cochran now, so we'll be fine.
Yeah, he's just going
to we
motivate him.
I'm just happy you picked up on it. I'm going to refer to Georgia as we all season long.
All right.
The Florida listeners are going to go start to just revolt after a little while here.
Oh, yeah. Especially as we start by trashing Jabari Zuniga and just keeping it going.
That wasn't even intended.
You mentioned Scott Cochran, of course, who's arrived in Athens to cure the Georgia disease. Alabama has reportedly moved forward in replacing Cochran and has targeted Indiana's David Ballou. This has not been made official, but we're basically widely reporting this. Bruce Feldman, among many, many others, are reporting it. Barton, I'll throw this to you first. I've got his biography. I had to write the news story for CBSSports.com, but I don't have any personal previous interactions or inside knowledge. I know he was with your beloved Fighting Irish at Notre Dame for a season before he went back to Indiana. Do you have a real read on who this guy is and sort of what his trajectory has looked like?
So I think this is a really fascinating. So the Scott Cochran he's from the Tommy Moffitt tree down at LSU. A little old school. Obviously, his personality is very sort of stereotypical strength coach. David Ballou is, I assume that's how you say, I don't even know if that's how you say his name, but he's being hired from Indiana. Previously was at Notre Dame, as you said. Before that was at IMG Academy.
Yeah.
For a couple years. And then before that, he was just a high school coach or high school strength coach. But he's coming. There's sort of like a package deal. It's him and this guy, Matt Ray, who is sort of a sports scientist of sorts. And so these guys are very new age, very like analytics driven, shifting the way where they're thinking about strength training, injury prevention, much less about what do you bench, much more about, what's, are you doing, are we doing this efficiently? Is this actually translate to on the field success and those sort of things? And they're, without knowing them or having firsthand insight, reportedly this is just a little bit more of a, they're not yellers, this is more of a, I guess clinical approach to things. I found a couple stories. I mean, I would be encouraged if I was an Alabama fan, because this feels like it's much more modern and new age in terms of the approach, which I think is probably a good thing. And just sort of an example, I just pulled this quote from a story from Ballou. He said, "We know contact off the line of scrimmage happens as fast as 0.45 seconds between O and D linemen. If our guys can produce their peak power at 0.45 seconds, we're going to have a chance off the line of scrimmage. Whereas if you got a guy that can squat 700 pounds, but it takes him 0.7 seconds to get to his peak power, the other dude is into him and he's going to lose." So the idea isn't how much can you bench, how much can you squat. It's about how explosive can you get. And I think that is the right approach. It's sort of individualizing the workouts. Every person's body is different. you know, having, being able to monitor, you know, how strong is your left leg versus your right leg? How strong is your left upper leg versus lower leg? So that you can have the information to see where you need to correct to sort of prevent injuries. Cause I, you know, obviously that's an area where like injuries pop up is when you're, compensating for, imbalance and those sort of things. And so I think that like that sort of approach is probably the way this is all going. And these guys seem to be pretty cutting edge.
I was able to look up, I Googled and I found Ballou's basic philosophy in a short little poem. I cite, he looks for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. He means the bare necessities, old Mother Nature's recipes that bring the bare necessities of life.
Hey, I can do it too. Much love to Jungle Book, no doubt. I thought you were about to hit us with some with some like real deep you know, football talk. So I'm like,
I love football here.
I want Rams and compassion.
Yeah. Rams are tough but compassionate.
I wonder if Scott Cochran's ever read The Bare Necessities.
I don't think so.
Probably not. It's more Rocky IV.
So we're giving this, I guess, I'm not thumbs up, because you've got to wait until the effects are already put in place. You know, as we mentioned before, this point in the calendar, the program is installed. They've already got what they're going to be doing. It'll probably be until next offseason that we could even try to feel like we've got an idea of what kind of impact, positive or negative, this has on the Alabama team. But I assumed that it was that stop at IMG, just because Alabama does, you know, end up recruiting some of those guys that play on that IMG sort of prep football team. Also, he was involved in helping with some combine training for like 24 players over a couple of years. And so, you know, that would be another opportunity for Saban and the Alabama team to get a good look at him. So obviously this looked like they went to the streets and they asked for one of the best in the biz. You know, you can't look at it and just be like, oh, he came from Indiana. Like, you can't look at, in this position, I don't think that I can look at Indiana and in the same way, if I would consider Indiana, yes, lesser of a program than Alabama, that doesn't mean that it'll extend all the way down to your strength coaches.
Right. And I think, to me, this is what's interesting about this is he's going the non-meathead route. And I don't, like, that's not really been necessarily Nick Saban's route. I mean, Nick Saban's route's always been, we're going to get bigger. We're going to be bigger and stronger than you. And this guy's more about, we're going to train smart. I wonder how much of that is going to clash with Nick Saban's, like, let's go ones versus ones in November and like battle it out. I'm just curious about that. And then I think the other side of this is like, my hunch is that this is an upgrade on the strength and conditioning side of things. But Scott Cochran was the guy that, it wasn't just about strength and conditioning, it was about like having the pulse of the team, having the trust of Nick Saban, that communication regularly throughout the season. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, and there's no way for us to know how well these two guys, Ballou and Ray, adapt to sort of that element of the job. But Nick Saban continues to evolve.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Nick Saban also stood up there and said, is this what we want football to be? Talking about, you know, trying to change the rules to prevent up-tempo offenses from having an advantage against the defense. And sure enough, you know, it's probably 6 years later, but 6 years later, what do we see Tua doing? I mean, just running that Alabama up-tempo offense. I think that his willingness to sort of move with the times, like, he might fight it at first, but they were down 13-0 to Georgia in the national championship game, and he said, all right, fine, put him in, run no huddle. And sure enough, they came back and won the title. I feel like that had to be one of the moments where everything sort of flipped for him.
Yeah, this is a very non-stubborn hire.
Yeah. Word. All right, Barton, Are you prepared?
Book club?
Yeah.
All right. Book club it. You ready?
Yes.
So the Cover 3 Book Club, since we're friends, you know, the three of us are friends, all of our listeners are our friends as well. This is the off season. This is reading season, because otherwise all we're doing is watching football in our spare time. So it's good to have recommendations from our friends. All right. So we've been this is still a football podcast. You know, we've been trying to broaden your horizons by giving you some non-football books through the first three. But I figured, just to make sure we don't lose everybody, I'm going to bring you back in, give you a football book. I present to you The Perfect Pass by S.C. Gwynn. It is basically the history of the air raid. The primary kind of focus of this book is Hal Mumme, and how Hal Mumme came up with, evolved the air raid. But for you Mississippi State fans out there, there's a lot of Mike Leach in here, and you know, just like it's not like one of these books that's just like all of like full of like quirky stories from the Mumme Leach road trips from their recruiting days at Iowa Wesleyan or whatever. Like that's not real. Like they have some of those, but that's not really what this book is about. It's more about sort of how the offense was installed, how they came up with it, sort of the Lavelle Edwards roots of it at BYU, the different iterations it took, and sort of why the climate was ripe for Iowa Wesleyan to be this test tube for them to create this offense and then evolve it at Valdosta State and all that. And so I just thought this book was a really good read. It gives you some of the kind of X's and O's of like what the air raid is, but it's not heavy handed at that. It's not like it's very consumable. It runs pretty clean through just sort of a chronological order of how this all came about. And so I loved it. I thought it was great. It was a quick read, and I'll give you just one just to as a little nugget, even though that's not really what this book is about. I thought this was a funny segment which talked about how Mike Leach and his multi-purpose role during his time at Iowa Wesleyan. This is talking about how Hal Mumme gave him a lot of jobs. Though his main job continued to be coaching the offensive line, where he was making his own innovations, including larger splits and all the highly specialized mechanics that went with them. He also excelled at the many jobs Hal had given him, which he pursued with an almost reckless single-mindedness. As the team's sports information director, he pestered papers from the Burlington Hawkeye and the Des Moines Register to USA Today for coverage of Iowa Wesleyan football, and in fact succeeded in getting the college a few mentions. This attracted the attention of Iowa Wesleyan's actual public information officer, whose job it was to deal with the press. She was furious and asked President Prinz to intervene. When challenged, Leach told her he believed that her office, quote, couldn't get Iowa Wesleyan into USA Today unless there were a mass murder. As a punishment for his sins of overreaching and for his impolitic language, Leach was banished from campus for 3 days by President Prinz. So it was a very like renegade program at this NAIA school with Leach and Mumme and Dana Holgerson as one of their wide receivers. And like, it's just kind of cool how this all came together and how it evolved.
I have read it. I will also recommend it. I'll also recommend another book written by S.C. Gwynn, who wrote the book, who's more of a history writer than he is like a football sports history writer. This was kind of he wrote Rebel Yell. It's about Stonewall Jackson. That's also a very good read too.
There you go.
When we've got the balance of the X's and O's, is it being described as though the audience is a layman? Not a football coach?
Yes. No, absolutely. This is not a book for football coaches. This is a book for football fans.
So if you've been watching a lot of air raid offense, the explanations of it might not be opening your eyes to anything you don't already understand.
No, but I think it will. It does give you a much deeper insight into what's going on,
like the philosophies that inspired it.
Yeah, and just sort of the intricacies of what makes it good, and how and why this is a system that can be so simple and still so successful. And I just think the foundations of it are, and it does get into some of the schematics of it and philosophies that you're working through. But I think all of that is like, I learned stuff for sure on the football side of it.
The Perfect Pass, American Genius and the Reinvention of Football by S.C. Gwynn. Barton's recommendation and bonus recommendation was that Tom, Rebel Yell by S.C. Gwynn.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Good stuff. All right. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Tom Fernell. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Deserve.
All-star-studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.